It's July 24th, and welcome to this third edition of the Geekspin podcast. Well, hey, welcome back, everybody, and thanks to those of you that have gone through the effort of downloading and listening to the first two shows. Thanks for the feedback, and I hope I'll be able to deliver what you want from the show, and keep stay tuned. And what a night it's been. I've been battling with this trial version of Mixcast Live, and let me tell you, this thing has been hammering my machine, and I think maybe that is because I've got just a teeny bit too little memory for it, but I was really having I was really hoping that this thing would do what I needed to do, because it looks like an excellent package. For those of you that want to check it out, go over to bigfeeder.com, and there is now a download available for a trial version. This package will retail for about $50, and I guess I'll just have to see, maybe stick some more memory in my machine and then see how it handles the application. So a little bit disappointed, so we're back onto Audacity, I guess, for the time being. Let's see, how's my week been? Been pretty crazy at work, and then of course I was off sick for a day. I was a little bowled over by a flu, case of the flu, and how it goes. Lots of sniffles, and lots of medication, and lots of tissue paper, and I'm feeling a lot better, thankfully. And we'd trying to put the show out. I think there's a fantastic lineup of news this week, and before we get into that, I think we'll play some music. There's of course PodSafe music provided by the friendly people from podcastnyc.com, and then shortly followed by a little promo, and let's just get into it. This is a track called Burn, and the band is called Curious.
Thank you. Digital photography is a confusing world. There are so many things with strange names like f-stop, depth of field, and histograms. It's hard to make sense of it all. That's when I switched to Tips from the Top 4. It makes everything understandable. Now I don't have to be a photography whiz to understand how it works. You have to take the leap and subscribe. My name is Jay Williams, and I'm a graphic designer.
Right, so that was Burn by the band called Curious, and followed by the promo by Jay Williams for his show Tips from the Top Floor. And for those of you amateur photographers out there, that sounds like a fantastic show. I know I'll be checking it out. And yeah, subscribe. I was just having a thought earlier, and a lot of people were asking me, listen, but you know, why is there so much ums and ahs, and you know, sometimes it just sounds plain awkward. And of course that is because we live to the hard drive, and I record the show in one go, and there's no editing, you know, editing of clips together, and I don't cut out anything, and what you hear is what you get. So if there's anything odd going on, you know, sometimes I'm sure you'll find that from time to time. You know, just ignore it and appreciate it. And I think that's one of the great things about podcasts, is because they're so raw and unedited. I think on that note, maybe it's time to jump into the news. A lot of news tonight, and let's just dive in with the first article. Over on TechDirt this week, yeah, there was a little mention about Associated Press, and what they've done is they've actually released a press release regarding BitTorrent. As you may have heard, Opera, the browser, they're releasing a built-in support for BitTorrent into their browser, and primarily the reason behind that is that they need a cheaper way to transfer the actual browser and not hit their servers as hard. And BitTorrent is a fantastic protocol for file transfer. Basically, if you've got a large file, and I mean, these are legitimate files. I mean, you get lots of Linux distributions and now Opera, and you can actually download them using a BitTorrent client. The premise of BitTorrent is basically you'll be downloading an application, and as soon as you get a chunk, a recognized chunk downloaded, your machine will actually start acting as a server. So, you know, basically what will happen is you've got this distributed file now, and people are downloading from all sorts of places, and the advantage for you as a BitTorrent downloader is that you're obviously getting the files at a lot quicker rate, no congestion of a central server, and for the people who are hosting the files, of course, means a lot less bandwidth bills. Now there's been a lot of you know, stories going on. I mean, there was the Grokster ruling where, you know, basically they now shut down because people were saying they sort of facilitating piracy, and you know, lots of people are now looking at BitTorrent in the same way. And what happened is that Associated Press released this news about Opera web browser going BitTorrent route, and basically what they've done is they've you know, they've labeled it piracy tool turns legit, and these guys over at TechDirt are just saying it's pretty ridiculous. You know, basically BitTorrent is a protocol, and on its own it is not a piracy tool, and it just seems that people are getting bored, you know, with this whole Opera announcement. So yeah, why not spin it nicely and you know, spin it as BitTorrent finding a way to sort of like become legitimate and you know, forgetting a reason to exist. So have a look there, and you can make your own decision. I mean, it's just we you know, Kazaa runs over HTTP, and does that mean HTTP is a piracy tool? I mean, that's just ridiculous. So you can go over and have a look. Of course, all of the articles that we'll be talking about tonight will be linked on the blog, and yeah, we'll be giving the details out to that later in the show. And I don't know how many of you use WinZip. WinZip is probably the most downloaded application on the internet today. You can download it for free and use it as long as you like. Of course, it is seen as shareware, and they do ask you to pay for it, and apparently it hasn't been too successful in the past. Of course, WinZip, once you pay for it, you there's nothing much extra you get. There's no special upgrade, there's no additional features. So, I mean, the incentive really isn't all that much for people to pay for their copies of WinZip. Now, what happened is WinZip as a company were actually bought by another company. And what's happening is that this company, they are now going to try and turn around a bit of the WinZip story. You know, they're going to try and make some more money. I'm just trying to find the company's name for you. I do have it here. It's a company called, it's an investor company called Vector Capital. Now, Vector, of course, is the same company who bought Corel up. And they've managed to turn Corel around and make them a profitable company. So it'd be interesting to see what happens to WinZip. It's pretty funny to think that WinZip has been around for this many years and apparently they just don't make any money. Really, they just haven't been that proactive. Basically, what this company, Vector, is saying is that they're just going to try and ramp up the effort to get money in. Of course, it will remain shareware, but they might add some additional features. Or give you a nice upgrade path if you've paid for it before. So keep your eye out there. WinZip could just become more annoying. I mean, those nag screens could just get worse, or maybe they'll hang around for a bit later. I don't know, for a bit longer. I don't know, let's see. Yet another TechDirt article I've got here. Refers to a survey that have been released earlier this week. And it's all about voice over IP versus traditional telecoms. Basically what their findings were that people actually do like voice over IP and they do use it and they're quite happy with their service. But it has shown that voice over IP is actually still fairly unreliable. The best of the companies only performing at about 95% uptime at the moment. And the sound quality is actually a bit worse than the traditional landlines. Although people do still use it. And I think what you can get from that is that basically if the price is right, people will use the service. And I mean, realistically, if you look at where we were about 4 or 5 years ago, voice over IP has really come a long way. It's not just, I mean, it used to just be like a soup can attached to a string. You know, attaching you to the rest of the world. I mean, the audio quality used to be that bad. So basically, it seems like things are going well there and should be in very exciting spot in the next 2 or 3 years. I mean, if we continue with the development like we've seen it in the past couple of years, it should be fantastic, especially now with competitors to Skype coming out, you know, like Gizmo. Should be a good show. Right. Okay, over on Slashdot, the beginning of the week, it was a post up, and apparently old Bill Gates is swearing a vow against what they refer to as son of iPod. And basically, what the story is, Microsoft, you know, they got their butts kicked a bit in the whole MP3 sort of portable audio race. The fact is they just went there to benefit of it, and Apple had a fantastic scheme with the iTunes, and I mean iTunes, I saw this week they've passed the 500,000 download mark, so things are going well for Apple. Fantastic revenue stream, lots of consumer confidence, and it's working out nicely. What's happened is shortly after the Apple launched iTunes, Microsoft then realized that, okay, they dropped the ball a bit, and since like April 2003, they've really been starting to proactively courting the Hollywood companies. AOL, Time Warner is now a big partner, even after the big claim that they had to settle with regard to AOL and the fact that Microsoft crushed Netscape due to their monopolistic behavior. It seems that there's a great relationship there. Now Disney is coming into the fray, and also Microsoft is, basically what's happening is Microsoft are doing their very best at the moment to please everything that these Hollywood chaps are telling them. I mean, there's two sides of the story. I mean, firstly, it's fantastic to have more content available. But secondly, what's happening is that obviously there's a lot of piracy going on, and as a movie vendor, the first thing you want to do is you want to lock it down. And then there's all sorts of complications when it comes to fair use. Microsoft are now working, they've of course acquired this company Content Guard with all sorts of anti-copying techniques and piracy doodads and all sorts of stuff. And what's interesting, what's coming out now, is that there's a lot of development going on in this advanced access content system. And one of the interesting things that's happening is you know, they're trying to lock content down to one network or maybe one household. And I mean, I think that's the biggest thing that I can get out of this article. You can have a look. I mean, this is quite a nice article, quite a long one, originally written for the LA Times. A fantastic device that I got, I think it's also over from Slashdot, yep, from Slashdot, is this thing called the Aeronix Zippit Instant Messenger Appliance. Basically, this is a $99 embedded Linux device, features Wi-Fi, and what seems great about it is that, I just need to pause here. Oh boy, we're back, and unfortunately that's podcasting as it's live to the hard drive, and sometimes these things happen. There's some problem, some crisis with some or other pet, and that's now resolved, so let's get back into the news. Let's see, where were we? Okay, so there's this $99 Linux-based handheld device. It features Wi-Fi, and it's called the Aeronix Zippit, if you remember. Basically, what it is this handheld instant messenger, and really looks like a fantastic little application. Supports a 16-color grayscale LCD, 320x240 resolution. Has a little thumb keyboard with rubber buttons, and it's also got a included stereo deck. And basically, this thing looks fantastic. I mean, $99 is really cheap. It supports a whole bunch of these messenger clients at the moment. So you'll probably see MSN there, and you'll probably see AOL, and a few of the other ones. And it looks fantastic. I mean, this could be another killer application. And I mean, obviously it's designed for kids, so you get all these bright colors. But I mean, I think it's great for a developer looking for something to start fiddling around with embedded Linux. I mean, and already there's a bunch of hacks coming out. LinuxDevices.com is reporting that a group of developers working on what they call the IBO hack project have already started using this device. Of course, it's got the wireless built in, so that's what's nice. And they've been starting to use this to control the IBO. So, great news there. Hey, it seems like blogging is really starting to become profitable. Over on Slashdot, there was again a link, and this is actually linking back to Robert Scoble, and of course he's again linking to someone else. I mean, that's just the nature of blogging. But basically, this guy is claiming that he's earning between $10,000 and $20,000 per month now using his Google AdSense. You can check this guy's blog out. It's over at problogger.com. And what's interesting is that he seems to have really earned a lot of money these last couple months. Apparently in 2004, you know, things didn't go that well, even with the Google AdSense, and now in 1 month he can earn about well over half as what he's earned in 2004. So it really looks like blogging is now taking off. I mean, this is long-running debate whether blogging is really the next new media, and whether bloggers are really journalists and whatnot. But it does seem that it is a viable business option, even just using one source of revenue, which is Google AdSense at the moment for this chap. But I mean, there's all sorts of stuff coming up now over at Weblogs Inc. I've read that these guys are now also bringing in somewhere close to $1 million a year. So I mean, lots of profit going around and lots of opportunity. And what's interesting is that the growth rate, you know, is actually still accelerating. So the future does look fairly rosy there at the moment. There's another theory on Apple's move to Intel at the moment. And I mean, there's lots of to and froing. People are saying, well, it's the processors, you know, they needed the clock speed. And some people are saying, no, it's because it's going to save a lot of money, you know, if they stick to all Intel processors. And other people are saying, oh, you know, but IBM are making these processors for the new Xbox, and Apple is just like feeling a bit neglected. This chap, Larry Loeb, has written an article, and he's got a totally different theory, and it is so crazy, it seems like it actually seems like it might just be this one. I do think it's a combination of the lot. I do think a lot of them, a lot of different factors came to play. And you don't just change your processor based on one single thing. What this guy Larry is saying is that there's a group called the Trusted Computer Group, which is a multi-vendor association that grew out of Microsoft's preemptive trusted computing platform effort. And basically, when you are part of the Trusted Computer Group, your hardware will be plugged in to this like security system. Basically, all of your machines that you will be releasing will come with a hardware component that will basically lock down your whole network on a hardware level. So basically what you're sitting with is this like secure network framework type thing, but it's controlled on a hardware level. And at the moment, and here's the catch, is if you want to play in that area, you're going to need Intel hardware, because they're the only guys who are going to be supporting it for at least the near future. So, here Apple was sitting and they were saying, hey, this looks like a fantastic idea, but oh boy, what are we going to do? We don't have the right hardware. Here we're sitting with IBM. So, it's so crazy, it almost seems like it could be the real reason. But go over and check it out and make your own assumptions. I see that movie kiosks are going Bluetooth, at the Lowe's, there's theaters called in the US, and they're called Fox and Lowe's theaters. Basically, Basically, Fox, which is of course a media provider, and Lowe's, which is a theater company, they've inked a deal for these kiosks that will be available, I imagine, at the movie theaters, and you'll be able to actually put your Bluetooth phone on Discoverable, and these things will beam down movie trailers, posters, wallpapers, stuff like that. It's an interesting idea, but I'm a bit worried. There is this thing called blue snarfing, and if you don't know what it is, basically that's where people try to like opportunistically connect to your phone if you have your phone set in Discoverable. This just seems like an ideal opportunity for somebody to put a device nearby and then start loading some sort of disruptive content, or trying to like get access to your phone and steal stuff off there. I mean, email addresses and contact numbers are worth their weight in gold nowadays. So just be careful out there. And I don't know if I'll just start doing that. It just seems a little bit risky. On PCMag.com, Lance Ulanoff has written an article talking about Microsoft's decision to start including RSS into the distributions of Internet Explorer 7.0 and Windows Long On. And he's saying it's to him it seems like deja vu. And he mentions a couple of examples, one being the DOS 6.0 race race for memory management. And if you can think back, there used to be a hell of a lot of applications and third-party companies supporting memory management for DOS, And basically with DOS 6.0, Microsoft came out and said, hey, there's this thing called memory management, and we've included our own in DOS 6.0. And of course everybody was very excited, and these companies were saying, that's fantastic, because now people will turn their attention to our packages, because now they'll be aware of this memory management issue, and it can only be good. Well, what happened? A couple of months later, these companies all slowly started to go disappear, close their doors. So Microsoft basically took that market, ran with it, and trampled it to death. Now, this Lanz guy is saying that maybe the same thing's going to happen with RSS. Of course, current RSS market players, they all seem fairly happy about this idea, but I mean, it is something that you can be worried about. I mean, like they say, history repeats itself, and nothing's ever really new, and let's hope this is not the case. Brian Livingston, has written an interesting article on picking the best RSS client, and it's actually a great little article, and it goes into a lot of depth on your different options that you have. It's the options for Mac users and Firefox users, and goes down to podcast readers. It's a great little article, check it out. I mean, there was a few things there that I didn't know actually existed, and one that I'm interested in checking out is an application called Pluck 2.0. He claims it's cross-browser support, so it'll support your IE browser and your Firefox browser, and basically it synchronizes your feeds with with a web server, so that should be fantastic to use at home and at the office. At the moment I do use blog lines for exactly that reason. I can go anywhere and, you know, I can read my blogs and can know what's going on. You know, if I move to another PC, of course it's all online, so you know, there's no problem with synchronizing them. Have you ever heard of this company called BlinkX? Basically it's a search engine, and I just found this the other day and I was pretty intrigued. And what BlinkX is doing is they're consuming whole bunches of data from radio, TV, and as well as podcast recently, and basically they're consuming the data, the actual media, and they're transcribing it into text, and that allows you to do a search across actual media files. And that's a fantastic feature, I reckon. Provided it's fast enough, of course, and the media gets on there fairly quickly, I think it's an interesting thing, and I'm going to start using it and start picking up on some of the events that I'm interested in from traditional media. And what's interesting is that then now I've launched this RSS alert tool, and basically you can go log on to the site, you can subscribe, and you can create your own feed. So whenever anything that matches your search terms comes online, you'll just get a new RSS item available. Sounds fantastic. I don't know if they're including enclosures at the moment, but I'll be checking that out very soon. On msmobiles.com there's a post by a very angry chap. It does seem to be one of the MS Mobiles bloggers, and basically they are just complaining, and they're saying that, you know, Microsoft has just really squandered the opportunity in podcasting at the moment. Apple has taken this idea and they've run with it, and what's interesting is that Robert Scoble recently interviewed Steve Ballmer, apparently according to his article, and he asked him, you know, straight up, when's this going to happen? You know, Steve Ballmer was saying, we're a fairly innovative company, and you know, they're going to like seriously try and get the story up and running, but nothing has happened so far. And of course, you know, this is just again pointing out that Microsoft was slow in the uptake on the internet, for example. I mean, they were just dismissing this idea and saying this will never happen, and whatever. And they've paid the price. And, you know, they even go as far as saying that Microsoft has even refused to acknowledge the name podcasting, and then naively think that RSS with encloses is just generic technology for everything, not just audio. Okay, I mean, that is true. I mean, it's not incorrect, but, you know, you can't deny the number of people currently logging into iTunes. I mean, we're reaching ridiculous numbers here, and yeah, it should be interesting. Let's see what they come up with. Microsoft, this is your wake-up call. It's time to do the thing. Yeah, I mean, how often have you seen blown street lamps? I mean, here in South Africa, that happens quite often, and you see the little truck pulling up, and they change the bulbs, and it actually takes quite long often. I mean, I've seen them battling for hours, literally. What's happened now is that the Dutch are now lighting their lights, lighting their streets with LED technology provided by Philips. It's fantastic technology, apparently, and it allows them to run these lights, these bulbs, for about 12 years, which is fantastic. Of course, we've been seeing these new high-energy LEDs at the back of our cars and of our motorcycles, and it seems that now they're actually applying them practical application as a street lamp. The whole town of Ede, of course, in the Netherlands, has been outfitted with these lamps, and it should be interesting to see if this technology starts filtering down to us here in South Africa. It is apparently about twice as expensive, but with a lifetime that is about four times longer than traditional gas for street lamps, that should be fairly interesting. Like they're saying, at the moment now the lights are really limited by the lifespan of the pole and not the bulb anymore, which is fairly interesting. On the switched on column in the that you can get via Engadget, which is of course written by a fantastic author, Ross Rubin. He is describing a new online community called PeerFlix, and basically what PeerFlix is it's a swapping community. So if you have any DVDs that you're tired of, you don't want to watch them anymore, you can sign up. You can post them on the site, and they will facilitate a swap transaction. Basically, they charge a 99-cent transaction fee, and senders are responsible for the postage charge of 37 cents for the mailers that the company distributes. So basically, you're looking at $1.36 for a DVD. Yeah, this is another interesting fair use argument just waiting to happen, and I do think people are going to be eyeing this quite closely. The problem, of course, is that you can easily buy that DVD for $1.36, make a quick copy, and then get rid of it, which is, of course, actually legal, because you did own rights to that DVD, and it is your right to make a copy, according to fair rights laws at the moment, I do believe, and it should be interesting. I mean, this could just be another Grokster case waiting to happen. How would you like to have a 39-megapixel camera? Yeah, well, I mean, it is possible. There is this company that called Phase One that now providing, they call it the P45 39-megapixel camera pack. Now, I'm not a camera whiz at all, and I'm not sure what camera pack means, but I've derived from the article that it's basically something that will adapt to certain pre-existing cameras, and it'll allow you to take photos at 39 megapixels. That really is fairly fantastic. You're looking at 117 megabyte file, which is of course enormous. I own a 1 gig compact flash, and that means I won't even be able to put 10 photos on there. The link is available. You can have a look. I'm sure it's going to be incredibly expensive. There aren't any prices available yet. It's just this link to the PDF. Let's keep an eye on it. It sounds like a fairly interesting project. There are about three models in the range. Yeah, fun stuff. I've been looking around for a book on technical writing. just looking for some advice. You know, I need to start getting my ideas in order, because I'd love to put together a couple of technical articles on things that I do know, whether it be a bit of web development stuff. You know, I'm a PHP developer by career, and you know, maybe there is an opportunity to put some of the stuff that I've learned into a couple articles. And, you know, the other things as well. I mean, I'm into the slot cars, I'm into the RC stuff, and it'd be great if I can get a book that's more targeted to maybe engineers, in this case, engineers and scientists. And I found this article via Slashdot, and the book is called Spring into Technical Writing by Barry J. Rosenberg, and there's a review of it, and we'll be putting the link up. And for those of you that are interested in writing some technical documentation, I mean, I'm a bit worried that it'll be too technical, but it's somewhere, and they do say if you know more than two classes of noun or something of the sort, then maybe this book isn't for you, and you should be looking at something more towards the literature side. But I think it'll be handy, and I'm hoping it will tell me how to organize my thoughts better and how to really get my message across. And you know, it'll probably handle diagrams and all this sort of stuff, which is probably handy. So yeah, that's one that I'll be definitely checking out. Let's hope it's not too expensive. It's 318 pages. There's the ISBN number, so I'll be looking it up on Amazon very soon. CNET has released a list of its top 10 fads of all time. I have actually linked to this on the blog, and there's some stuff there that really brought a smile out on my face. They referred to the hamster dance, and of course my favorite is All Your Bass Are Belong to Us, and don't forget the Dancing Baby. Check it out. I mean, it's quite interesting. It actually goes into mentioning Blogger there at number 9, and it's got Friendster at number 6. I mean, some interesting web fads that they mentioned there. So that's a top 10 list of web fads. It should bring a smile to your face at the very least. Some Firefox news this week is that Firefox has actually decided to scrap the planned 1.1 release. And if, in case you're wondering why, it's basically because they're jumping to 1.5 immediately. Just because I believe that there's been so many significant bug fixes and changes that it warrants them jumping to 1.5 immediately. So don't get confused. We're expecting 1.5 fairly soon, and it should be around September somewhere. CNET has another list. This is the iPod Killers list. I think this is something they release every year. I remember seeing iPod Killers 2004. This is iPod Killers 2005. For those of you looking for a new digital device, do have a look here. There's some interesting alternatives to the iPod, including the Arquest G Mini 400, which I'm a great fan of, and a couple of the iRivers, like the H10, the H340. They do have the Sony Network Walkman, and the Toshiba Gigabit. They do give a short review of all of these and of the feature list, and they do give the price ranges. Fantastic little once over thing. Have a look there. I think you'd find lots of value in that. And I believe that is actually the end of the news this week. It's been a very rash podcast. I'm sorry to put you through it. I think it's been all right. Sorry for the interruption earlier. We are, of course, live through the hard drive, and that's just the way it goes. Final note. If you haven't yet seen, if you are a podcaster and you haven't yet seen the PodSafe Music Network, this is, of course, an initiative by Adam Curry and the guys over at podshow.com. Check it out. You can find it at music.podshow.com. They've got a subscription model going on there. Well, not a subscription model. Basically, you just subscribe, and you get to use a fantastic list of PodSafe music. And once you've played a track, all they require from you is that you marked it as played, and then the artist can get a get an idea of who's playing the music, and I think it's a fantastic concept. I mean, it is actually quite a battle to find great music to play, and there's just this fantastic plethora of music available there at the moment. I'm going to be playing out with one of the tracks that I've downloaded from the Podsafe Music Network. It's by a group called Manda and the Marbles, and the track's name is Say Anything. Yeah, here we go. For that, I mean, fantastic. I mean, can you believe this stuff is free? This band is unsigned. That's, of course, Manda and the Marbles, and the track is called Say Anything. Well, that's it for this week, and yeah, good night, everybody. See you around.